It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all, welcome into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, coming at you alone this week. It's going to be the John Solo version this week. Aaron's got plenty going on. He got himself roped into some tasks around the house that he's going to be unable to avoid. But still, we do apologize for having a week off there. Aaron was coming off of some guard drill work, and I mean National Guard duty, in which he had some rather intense things going on and some big inspection stuff. Nothing, you know, beyond that sort of thing, but still difficult things and a very, very long weekend for Aaron. And I, of course, have the newborn, so we were kind of tapped out last week. But I'm back, and you can always follow me at jbarn54. You want to follow Aaron, you can follow Aaron Flottam at Cheddar Talk, and you can always follow the show at ScottyJohnny1 on Twitter. You can also find us at the ScottyJohnny.com, as well as emailing us at podcast@ScottyJohnny.com. So if you're looking for any ways to interact with the show, those are some of the cleanest, easiest ways to reach out and find us here. So in terms of that, though, we are excited to get back, excited to get talking. There was just too much this week to try to lay low, so we'll get started with the main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Main event this week, big things. First off, this weekend, last week, I guess, we were talking that the Packers, in terms of their news, signed a bunch of free agents, the undrafted free agents. Not a lot of them are people who are going to be names that we really know just yet. There were not any big, giant, exciting names, and I'll be completely honest, I don't know any of them well enough to give you a whole ton on it. Okay, so we're gonna look at them. We're gonna keep our eyes on them as we go forward. They'll definitely be interesting as we get into training camp and start actually seeing something from these guys. But for the time being, we're just gonna note that they were signed. Today was actually the day, being Monday, the day where they were all signed and they put in their bonuses and everything like that. And this is an interesting point that was brought up on Twitter by some of the Packers reporters. This is one of the first times we've seen that there are actually signing bonuses associated with undrafted rookie free agents. Most of the time, a lot of these things are all set by that CBA, as you know well. At least you should know well if you've been following the NFL. But the bonuses and stuff like that, that's usually left up to teams in terms of how they're going to structure the money. This year, the Packers gave out some signing bonuses to players. They're not big signing bonuses, but it's something. Make sure these guys are walking out with something, even if they're not going to make the team. Of course, one of the things you have to do is you have to go get yourself a camp quarterback, because there's going to be a rookie camp. There's the rookie camp that was going on. You get your first chance to see some of these players, but you're not going to get anything from the tight ends and the wide receivers if you don't have a quarterbacking camp. And none of the veterans are coming to this camp. It's a rookie camp. So camp arm in place. We're going to get more things as we get going there. The other big news this weekend was, of course, Ted Thompson going into the Packers Hall of Fame. Well-deserved. I'll admit to this. I'm a large Ted Thompson fan. I love what he did for the team. I love how he went about his business. Anything else you want to say about him towards the end or whatever else is going on with him, it seems personal. It seems like there's whatever it is. If he doesn't want to talk about it, there's nothing there to be talked about, okay, as far as I'm concerned. This is a man who took over a team that went through some massive transitions under his watch. He had difficult decisions to make about how do you end it with one of the best quarterbacks your franchise has ever seen, or any franchise in that matter, one of the greatest to ever play the game, and how to handle that transition. Making difficult decisions like drafting a quarterback in the first round while you still have Brett Favre on the roster. So many different things that he did along the way. He definitely had his plan, he had his style, and he got a team together that was talented enough to win probably several Super Bowls. They won one. They did win one. Picked the coach that won one. And, yeah, you can look back at it and say that there were some problems that maybe they should have won more, but you can't say that the talent wasn't there. You can't say that there weren't players on the field. I mean, this team went to three different NFC title games, and they didn't do that because they were lucky. They didn't do that because they snuck in there with nothing. These teams were talented. These Packer teams were talented. They had players who could do just great things. I mean, like, they had Jordy. They had James Jones, who, by the way, was really good. He was a really good wide receiver. He was a great pickup. Devontae Adams, you had all these, Randall Cobb. You had the offensive lineman that he went out and got. I mean, he's the guy who went out and got most of those great linemen that helped carry us through. He's the guy who found Bakhtiari after Bakhtiari left college early from a losing program because he was tired of losing in Colorado. And he's the guy who went out and just found so many of these talented guys and also did very, very well with undrafted free agents like Tremont Williams or Sam Shields. So as much as everybody, anytime you've got a general manager who's been fired, every time he leaves, almost none of them leave happily. None of them are just walking off into the sunset saying, like, man, so great winning those six Super Bowls. I guess I'm just going to walk away now on my own. Very few people walk out like that, even people who are great. Ted Thompson was great for this franchise. He was great for the team, and he deserves every bit of thanks that the team can give him. And the Hall of Fame was well-deserved. It was a well-deserved victory for him and everything that he did for the team, and it was a celebration that should just be a celebration. And just anybody who felt the need to be, dire or down or just a blowhard, just going out there and saying mean things about Ted Thompson on his way out the door like that, in his moment, in the sun, that's just a ridiculous thing, and it's just it speaks more about you, if that's with you. It speaks more about that person, we'll say, than it does about Ted Thompson. That's really all there is in terms of the Packers. The one thing we'll go into next is we'll talk Brewers next because we'd like to end on the higher notes, obviously. Brewers did have a good week, though. They've done all right. After, well, and again, we're saying 2 weeks because I've been out here for a little bit. They had a nice little run, and we kind of talked about this before. We've mentioned that one of the problems we were going to be going over is the fact that the Brewers were playing a very difficult schedule to start off the year. They had a very hard start off. Dodgers, Cardinals, Cubs, Cardinals. It just a ridiculous sort of setup. And then they got a great little run here to start off May. They got a couple wins against, they got to play the Mets, 2-3 against the Mets, took 2 out of 4 against Colorado. Then they swept the Mets. Then they swept the Nationals. So that definitely helped out a lot. They took 1 out of 3 going into Chicago. So they're now 3-3 against the Cubs to start off the year. And then they get to go to Philadelphia and Atlanta before coming home, getting Cincinnati, Philadelphia, and then Minnesota and the Pirates to end this month. It's an easier month as it goes. Everything's going to get a little bit nicer as we go through this year. June is shaping up to have, the Marlins, the Pirates, Houston and San Francisco, San Diego and Cincinnati, Seattle, Pittsburgh, all those games. Things are going to get better. It's going to get a little easier. Jimmy Nelson seems to be continuing to move up through the minor leagues. It's always nice to be able to add some things. Gio Gonzalez has looked like a solid contributor going into there and being able to play in the starting position and strengthen up that cast there so they can keep some players from having to burn themselves out and give them a chance to get that AAA time to get up. In terms of some of the other things, though, it looks like the bullpen's had some ups and downs, obviously. In the last couple of weeks, though, this team has had an 18-inning game and then a 15-inning game just the other day against the Cubs, both of which were very long, low-scoring games. You got to score a run. They lost 2-1 on a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 15th against the Cubs when Contreras put one out. I mean, that's one that they could have won any number of different times. The Brewers are having a winning record. They're having a good start to the year, and they've got a better look coming up, like I said. The schedule's going to play more in their favor as they go ahead. Team's going to come around a little bit more. And the thing you have to point out, too, is that this team has not played well. Yelich has looked good. Yelich is doing everything he can out there. And, Lorenzo Cain, Lo Cain looks good out there too. Playing amazing defense. He's getting on base. He's doing what he always does. But Jesus Aguilar has played below his ability so far this year. Not well. Travis Shaw, he's just not getting anything going right now. And he's not going to stay down. I've mentioned before, Aguilar is one who does concern me because we saw it last year, and I didn't see it any time before that. It's possible last year is a fluke. It's entirely possible that's what happened, and maybe we need to keep our eye on starting Thames a little bit more. But Shaw's done it a couple years now. Shaw's not a fluke. That's who Shaw is. He's done it for two straight years as a big-time hitter, the mayor of Ding Dong City and all that. That is who he is. He is a real hitter. He is a real threat. He's going to come around. There's no way he stays this way. He's going to be the guy he's been. This is the fluke. The rest of that is the substance. That being said, Shaw's played well below his ability, and we've played without Moustakas with some injuries here, there, and everywhere. So it's been something where we've had some bad numbers coming into these things, and we need to get some guys coming back around to who they are and who they really are in these games. So looking at some of these batting averages, it's really sad. I mean, Shaw's at 167 as we start the game against the Phillies tonight on Monday. Cain, 250. Moustakas, 250. Grandal, 260. Grandal's been a great addition. He's been able to shore up that four spot when we haven't had a lot of power from a couple guys who aren't Yelich. Moustakas hasn't been a ton of power. He's been good when he's there. Thames betting fifth right now tonight at 250. I can't remember what Aguilar is betting at now, but he has not been particularly... 198. So he's pulled up a little bit. Braun betting 250, Perez 245. It's been a bunch of kind of average hitting so far. And then Yelich on top of all of that. I think a lot of these are going to pick up. Shaw's going to come back up. He's going to be a 250, 270 hitter, something like that. Arcia, who got crushed most of the year just to start off this season, how terribly he was doing. Now he's batting 248. I mean, he's a respectable hitter. If he's the defensive player that you see out there and he's batting 250, that's good enough. I mean, that really is. He's a legit player, and it's great to have somebody like that and to have the serious glove out there at shortstop. On top of that, we've been getting some nice innings from people like Burns and Barnes and Albers and Guerra, obviously Hader. Hauser with his fun little coming in and getting the start. They're the opener role, I guess, instead of the closer. Jeffress back on the bench now, so it's nice to have a couple more arms coming around. Chassin hasn't been terrible, but the big one wonderful part of this so far has been Zach Davies, who has been phenomenal. He's a 1.54 ERA, 46.2 innings, 46 and two-thirds innings. He's played really well. He keeps everybody in control. He doesn't get away from it. One of the other guys in the bullpen who I think is nice to watch and was a nice pickup here is Claudio. I think he's interesting. I just like watching him pitch, too, because he's got that weird little setup where he kind of rocks the whole glove when he comes in. And it's always nice to see something kind of, that affectation, that little flair type, something weird you never did. You know, when you were a kid, you were always emulating not just the great pitchers, but the pitchers who looked weird when they did it. You know, every kid did that. I guess I don't see my son doing that. But when I was growing up, we always emulated the weird swing, the weird pitch, and they usually had to be good so that they weren't terrible. You didn't want to emulate somebody who was awful, but you loved doing the weird looks, the weird pitch, the weird whatever it was. So he's an interesting one. Obviously, doing an old council at bat was always a fun one to do as well. So that's kind of the interesting thing to look at with Claudio, and it's nice to see that he's also been good. He's been a solid player, and he's been somebody who's good to come in those middle innings and at least save us for a little bit. So right now, after the series with the Cubs, the Brewers are two games back. They've played more. They are tied in the win column, but they're four games back in the loss column right now, 24-18. It's a 571 win percentage. They're still 7-3 in their last 10. They're ahead of Pittsburgh. St. Louis falling back to 3.5 back, game and a half behind the Brewers, along with Pittsburgh. Cincinnati 7.5 or 5.5 behind the Brewers. They're still doing well. They're still hanging out there in one of the top teams in the National League. And like I said, the harder parts are kind of behind us at this point. Brewers currently sitting in the number one wild card spot. But very clearly within striking spots of the Cubs, and they're going to stay there. I think they've got some staying power, and they've got the easier part of their schedule coming up. And the Cubs have kind of gone through their easy part of their schedule for the most part, so it's going to get something here where I think that they're going to have a nice little run through May, and I think June's going to look very nice. And I think by the All-Star break, the Brewers are probably going to be. I think they could be in first. I think they're as talented as the Cubs, and they can stay up there. And I think they're going to get into first because the schedule, I think, favors them more heading down into the All-Star break as we go along. Now, that's kind of all I got for baseball. But this was kind of a big week for basketball in Wisconsin. We have a team in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think Aaron and I have talked about it plenty. Aaron, obviously, especially more than me. This Bucks team had to reach the finals. They had to reach the Eastern Conference Finals, not the NBA, but they would have been a massive disappointment if they had not reached the Eastern Conference Finals this year. This team was so good. They outplayed people so much, and there were essentially three teams in the East that were worth watching. The Celtics were worth watching, I guess, in terms of the circus factor alone, but that's about it. They were not a consistent team. They were not necessarily a team that had had their stuff together or played the spunky little team that you wanted to watch like that. They were the circus factor in that you didn't know what was going to happen. Maybe they put out a great show one day, but you had no idea what they're going to do day to day. And they were never consistent enough to stay in that group. They found themselves in the 4-5 game, and you know the winner was going to get the Bucks almost certainly, unless of course there were giant upsets. But yeah, we didn't have upsets from either the Raptors or the Sixers, so they played each other, and they just ended up yesterday. So we know that it'll be Raptors-Bucks, and exactly what the NBA wanted, of course, which is Milwaukee versus Toronto for the Eastern Conference Championship. That's exactly what, if the Big Ten, if the NBA were drawing it up, that's not what they picked. This is their year to say, like, look, we're not rigging the games, because clearly we would not have picked Toronto and Milwaukee. Though it's going to be a great Midwest series of basketball in a coast-free Eastern Conference. So it's going to be a good series. I'll tell you, I kind of would rather have played the Sixers. I think I'll get to that in a second. I want to go over what happened in this series first. The Bucks had that game one loss, and it was the perfect storm. Everything that Aaron told you was going to be the problem with this team possibly is there's those times where they have a day where they don't shoot. And it was combined with a day where the Celtics shot amazing. All of it worked out kind of together into that, you know, the words, the perfect storm gets used a lot, but it was that perfect coincidental situation, we'll say, where they had the Bucks didn't do everything right, and the Celtics were getting it all right. They just hit every one of their shots that they were trying to get. Even the bad shots were going in, and it just played out terribly in terms of what happened to the Bucks, and they lost that first game at home. And then suddenly there were all the Celtics fans were out in force, and they really were. They were everywhere on my timeline. But the Bucks came right back, won big the next day, and then went into Boston, and they took both games in Boston, and you knew it was over then. You just knew it was over. When they got the first game, you could kind of see things weren't going well, and it started really that look for Kyrie. Kyrie killed this team, just killed them. He shot something like 30%. Every game, it was something like he was shooting 7 of 22, 7 of 24, 8 of 25, or something like that. He was shooting in that range where he was making one of every three kind of shots. And that's he can't play like that and have this team win, especially if he's out shooting everybody else on the floor. He had the lowest shooting percentage and the highest shot volume. So he's ending the day. They're like, man, he played a great game, 27 points. Like, he's not getting a point per shot. He's getting killed out there. He has made 8 of 23 or whatever it was. He was like 8 of 22 and had 27 points. And he was just wasting possessions for them, and he could not do anything. He's an incredible talent. And this is, again, what I keep saying about the NBA. It is full of incredible athletes. They're all amazing. They can do things that are just very interesting to watch. You can watch them dribble. It's an amazing amount of athletic ability. The talent is insane. Kyrie is exactly what people love about the NBA and exactly what I don't want to watch. He gets the ball, and then he just holds the ball. And then, you know, he'll pass, and then somebody else will go to somebody, you know, make one or two passes, but it gets to him, and it's done. He's going to shoot. He was shooting terribly from three, but he kept doing it. He doesn't find a different way to win. He does not have that, you know, like when LeBron or Michael Jordan are not winning, they find a way to get the ball to somebody else. If they're like, I'm not shooting tonight, I'm going to win by playing defense. And Jordan did that every time. If he was not shooting, he was going to beat you by getting the most assists that he could find. Or he would beat you by just playing the best defense you'd ever seen. He was going to do one of those things because he was going to beat you, because that's all he cared about. Kyrie is convinced, and so many players in this NBA are convinced, because they don't really remember Jordan. They remember what they were told about Jordan, or what they think they remember about Jordan from the video games, which is, man, he could score. And he could score. He really could. He could do it. He could do anything with a basketball. He was amazing. But, I mean, it wasn't just that he could score. Jordan had an all-around game. Jordan was a defensive player of the year just repeatedly. And he could pass. And he was an outside shooter, and he could dunk. But what people remember, because it's the only thing they put on the highlights, is that Jordan could dunk. And he went to the rim. And so now we have a league full of people who want to go and be like Jordan. And they're convinced it means that they take the last shot. They're convinced it means that they have to shoot more than everybody, that they have to win by scoring. And that's not how the league should be played. That's not how basketball is generally played. There are five people on the floor. The offensives don't seem to go just in the way that you recognize watching basketball or playing basketball when you were a kid. It looks like a pickup game. And I got some people arguing with me on Twitter this week that said, you know, one guy said without backing it up that you've never seen better or more ball movement. At the same time, statistically, since they started measuring it about 5-6 years ago, the assists per pass have actually decreased, meaning that the number of passes in a game and the number of assists, there's the same number of assists maybe, but the number of passes to get to the one that's an assist are going down. So it's a one-pass shoot. You know, it's the... When we were younger, when we were watching in the 80s, if there was a 2-on-1, the chances that one of those two guys was going to stop and shoot a three was almost zero. And it happens all the time now. You're going to watch it happen 3 times a game at this point, where you get a 2-on-1, but one of them will stop at a three-point line and wait to get an outlet pass on that play, rather than just go to the hoop, get sure you're getting those 2 points. It's a different game, and everybody's doing it because of the math, right? You take the calculus. My father, you know, growing up, has always said, like, shooting a three, if you're shooting 30% from three, that's like shooting 45%, because you got a whole extra point. It's like you made another half of a basket. You know, if there was a four-point shot, shooting, you know, 30% from the four-point shot would be like shooting 60% from, you know, inside in the two-point. But it's, you know, it's like shooting 45% if you can hit 30. So it's worth it to even shoot a lower percentage shot, because the value in the extra points, and everybody's done the math, and the metrics are there, and is where the entire league is going. It's what the Bucks do. The Bucks do this plenty. And the thing is that they've got a couple guys who can get in low, a couple guys who can shoot from other places, and they pass well. And they have Brogdon or Middleton or Bledsoe or somebody sit out there and hit the three as well. But that's, you know, if the drive doesn't work. And they can go inside. They do inside and outside, and they move the ball around. And I'll tell you, the one team who does great at this and actually plays an offense and really moves the ball around is Golden State. That team, they don't care who gets the shot. They really don't. I mean, Steph Curry was held to 0 points the other night. 0 points in the first half. And that wasn't what killed him. He was in the game. He kept making things happen. He never gave up, and not just forcing any shots. He didn't say, I have to shoot my way out of this slump. He said that they were going to do something else. He found different ways to make it work and eventually got his shot back and ended up with 33 points. But it didn't matter that he didn't make it, because then they got the ball to Clay. And then Clay made his shots. And since he was making his shots, they kept feeding Clay, because they don't care who gets the points that night. They're going to win. And that's the thing Kyrie didn't do. That's the thing he did not and could not do in this series, and it killed Boston. It just killed him. And I'll tell you, I was in Boston this last weekend with my son, just having a little trip out east and enjoying the time out there. And I actually took in a game at Fenway, and it was really great. My son and I sitting there at Fenway Park, and we started talking with people around. And, of course, eventually you mentioned that we're from Wisconsin, and they're like, oh, your team was really great this year. You guys had a really good team in Milwaukee. And I was like, yeah, sorry, you guys had to, you know, deal with that. And they're like, ah, no. So I started asking the people around. I was like, do you guys want Kyrie? Because I know ESPN says they don't, but I don't believe that necessarily, because they definitely get what Packers fans think way wrong all the time. And they were kind of like, ah, he'll probably be back, but we don't really want him. The fan take was that they don't want him. They were not particularly interested in continuing to have him around. I mean, that team was great last year. And if they went back with Terry, you know, scary Terry, and they got rid of Kyrie somehow this offseason, I think they'll still contend in the East. I think the Bucks are still going to be good next year. I don't think they're going to get worse. And if they win an NBA title, or they just get to the NBA Finals, they're going to have a chance to even talk to some of these free agents this year. And there's a couple that are interesting. And I mean, they just need to get one or two other guys to come in, and they could be an insanely formidable team with the type of players they have. And there's some of these guys out there who are going to be interesting to watch. I think winning more than anything brings in players who want to play on teams like this. Miami is a fun destination, but was not a basketball destination until, you know, they happened to get Dwayne Wade. And then, you know, other people want to go down there, and especially when LeBron wanted to go down there. People wanted to come play with LeBron when he was in Cleveland. And sometimes he was just carrying some dead weight around in Cleveland. But people want to go play for people who are going to help them win. And Giannis is one of those guys, because Giannis doesn't have to flaunt anything. He just plays hard. He just plays hard, and he doesn't talk a lot to the media. He doesn't talk himself up. He's just an interesting cat, and he helps everybody around him play better. Everybody around him looks stronger, looks better, has more space to do things, because you have to respect what Giannis is doing, and he's going to pass it. And I think that that's the sort of thing that people know, is that they can go to Milwaukee and succeed, and that's going to be more important, because they're still going to get paid, because this Bucks team is going to pay them what they can make on max deals elsewhere. And I think they overlook some of the other things, as long as they can get a chance to play. Because if I'll tell you, if San Antonio can do that, and San Antonio is a cute, nice little town too, but Milwaukee is also a really fun place to be. Don't tell me there's nothing to do there. That place is always going on. There's always concerts. There's always music. There's always fun. There's an incredible downtown. There's an incredible culture. There's an incredible group of different diverse people around Milwaukee. And I think that gets overlooked a lot when they try to tell us how much everybody would rather watch New York win. Yes, they might. And that's probably true. But the players want to win. And I don't think Giannis is going to go anywhere in the way that Kareem abandoned Milwaukee, turned his back on us after this team had him and helped him win an NBA title. I don't think Giannis is going to do that. I think he's a completely different cat. I think, first off, growing up the way he did makes him very different that way, and I don't think it's going to mean that he picks up and leaves in the way that we might expect somebody else to do so. So I think the Bucks have a chance to be good this year, maybe an NBA championship this year, and I think they have a chance to improve in the offseason. I think that that's entirely possible, and I don't think that that's an outlandish thing to say. I think they can do it. So that's where I'm with the Bucks. I started off saying earlier, and I said I'd come back to it, that I'd rather have played the 76ers than playing the Raptors here. Now, my reason for that is I think the Sixers have a ton of quit in them. I think Joel Embiid is the most fake tough guy in the league. He's the biggest fake bully there is. He likes to push people when their back is turned. He likes to talk. He likes to say things. And he'll put up one great game. Maybe two if you get him a seven-game series. He's not going to do it every day. He's just not. In the way that Giannis sometimes has a bad day or sometimes has a down game in terms of something or other, Joel Embiid dominates two out of five games. You know, he's a guy who, if you're going to bully him back as much as he likes talking and trying to bully you, he's got quit in him. And Ben Simmons, he's got to get to the rack or get the short shots. He's not going to beat you from three. And I think it played right into the Bucks' hands. I think it played right into their defense. I think that they can easily outcoach this team. And I really would have rather played them. And I'll say this is the rule of thumb that I always play is you always want to play the team that lost. You know, you'd rather play the team that did not get into the game against you because that team was the worst of the two. But in this case, I was telling people beforehand, I was telling especially my son on the trip, I'd rather play the Sixers. And like I just said, the reason is because they've got more quit in them. Kawhi Leonard scares me more than any of the players on the Sixers. That guy's got intensity. He's quiet. He doesn't need to talk. He goes out there and just does. And I don't care who else is even on that team at this point. He makes that team so, so good and so dangerous. Now, grant you, the Bucks had the better record against the Raptors all year long. That doesn't mean they're going to have it this week. But I really think that the Bucks are the better team. I think they're more talented. I think they're deeper. And this gets overlooked a lot. This Bucks team is deep. Their bench is doing great things. Hill coming off the bench. Mirotić coming off the bench. Connaughton coming off the bench. This team is deep. And they're getting, I think they got 49 points in the last game from the bench. It's the sort of thing that it's like there are not holes on this team. There's no weak spot you can attack and just kill the Bucks because they come at you with more guys. They're going to come at you too deep at every spot and just keep coming at you all game long. It's like the old Arkansas 40 minutes of hell sort of thing. Like they've just got people who can come out there and run you. When you try to rest, the Bucks are going to run you with their backups because our backups are way better than yours. If you're going to play us even with the top-end talent, if you can do that, you're still going to lose this game because the Bucks, when all the backups are in, are going to outscore you. And that's the thing I think is going to carry us through here is that I just think the Bucks are deeper and definitely, I think, going to get this. I think it's going to be a tougher series because I think they're way better. I think Toronto is more consistent. They're, I don't know necessarily more talented, but they are a more consistent, even-keeled team because Kawhi is a much better leader than Kyrie is. And I was going to call him Kyrie because clearly his name is the Greek word for Kyrie. It's just spelled exactly the same. Well, translated from the fact that the Greeks don't write in a romanized alphabet. Anyhow, that's a weird aside on my part because my mind works strange. I just think that Kawhi is the sort of guy who's going to keep them even keeled. I think they're going to come back in a couple games. I think it's going to be a six-game series, but I still think the Bucks win. I just think the Bucks are going to win this and that they're going to go off to the NBA championship, the NBA finals, and I don't know how they'll do there. We're going to take a look at that. We're going to reevaluate that when that happens because I'm telling you, it's going to happen. That's going to happen. There's no way around it. But that's really all that we have for you this week in terms of our main event. So we'll get you just a couple things here and some of our roundup of our other news here in the tail.
Now it's time for the tail, covering Wisconsin's other sporting news.
Okay, the couple little things in the tail here is that it was fun to watch the Badger graduations this week. We had a couple, obviously, star players in a lot of different places graduate. Annie Pankowski, one of our favorite women's hockey players, she's going on to grad school and eventually wants to go to veterinary school. So that's always very interesting, and obviously seems kind of obvious if you follow her on Twitter, how much she works with rescue dogs and different dogs and stuff like that during the season. So it seems like a great fit, and it's always fun to just see her go out there and do that that sort of thing. The other thing that was big this week was it was the Big Ten Outdoor Track Championships this week. I mean, Wisconsin didn't put place in the top five in men's or women's, it looks like, but they did have some great individual showings. They had four of the top 10 5K in the women's. Women's 4x4 also set the school record and finished second at the Big Ten Championships. Amy Davis placed second in the 5K and fourth in the 10K. Alyssa, is it Nigeman? She was the Big Ten champion in the steeplechase. Pardon me. And steeplechase is really fun to watch. It's like a ridiculous obstacle course of just weird hurdle type things and water obstacles and stuff. It's really fun to watch. So congratulations to her on the Big Ten championship. Also, a person we've mentioned before, Morgan McDonald, also got his Big Ten championship 10K. Yeah, he graduates this year as well. Great career for him. One of the best distance runners there is, one of the best in the country. And so great Big Ten for him, Big Ten championship for him. And it was just, again, good to see Wisconsin athletes doing well, even if the team sort of competition didn't come out the way that they'd hoped. So congratulations on all of that. And that's really all I'm going to have for you this week in our tale.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, so the last thing that we get to is usually where we come here in our last call. And normally this is where Aaron and I will have some back and forth on something crazy to talk about. There's not a lot I really want to go over this week. The one thing I want to say is I went to Boston, like I mentioned earlier, and it's fun to watch fans of other places. The fans in Boston did the wave while their team was in the midst of an 8-run inning. Okay, their own team was doing that. There's a lot of talk among, especially like the Brewers fans, just getting angry when people are doing the wave at the wrong times, or it's like, oh, we're on the offense, we got to do this. It's like, you know, people enjoy the game. Just let people enjoy the game. We spend sometimes way too much time trying to talk about exactly when we're supposed to do one thing or another. And yeah, sure, things like you need to stay quiet when the offense is on the field because you're actually hurting your team then. But the wave's just a thing. And if Boston watching an 8-run inning, and it was a great inning, it was really fun to watch, watching an 8-run inning happening, decides to run the wave, and they did it for quite a while. It went around, I don't know, 5-6 times before it kind of died out over the Green Monster, which is really hard to get a wave across. Then it's fine. You know, like, that stadium's been full for their hundreds, you know, 100-some-odd years, right? And they keep going back. Those are great fans. It was a great experience. Those people were wonderful. They were talking to. They were loud and having conversations. And it was a wonderful environment to be watching football. And those people can do that. It's fine. We get a little bit too caught up sometimes, especially with the Milwaukee Brewers and the Milwaukee Bucks. That sometimes we say, like, look, it's different because we're not the big markets. We don't get to go around talking about ourselves in the way that I guess even a Packers fan can, because the Packers fans, we're one of the three largest fan bases in America. You know, it's the Cowboys, the Steelers, and the Packers. And those are the three biggest. And they get the biggest draws wherever they go. But when we're talking about the Brewers, when we're talking about the Bucks, teams that don't have the sort of long history, the multiple championships, the outstanding sorts of things that we've come to expect from the Packers, and that you get to see when you go look at Boston, where all of their teams, including my beloved Boston Bruins, have won championships in the last decade or so. And, well, 2 decades, we'll say. Celtics have been a little bit longer. But, yeah, still, they don't have to feel a way to describe to the entire world that they're good fans. They just keep going because they don't have to, because they're kind of freed from that by the fact that the team won. So they feel like that vindicates that they're good fans because they've been sitting there to watch their team win. I think that as Brewers fans, we should be able to show how much we're great fans by the sheer fact that the Brewers remain as a top 10 in attendance at the ballpark, even in years where the Brewers were just not that good. You know, that it doesn't matter how good they are. The Brewers are a part of the culture. And I'll tell you, for me, basically the hierarchy of sports in my Wisconsin life is, you know, obviously Packers, and then the Badgers, and then Brewers, and then probably, I guess, you know, the Bucks would come in around last. But the thing about the Brewers is that they are a tradition. They are a statewide team. They wear the state on the logo with the M, and it really is something that you can just have and just listen to, and it is something that is ingrained into your spirit as somebody who watches the Brewers. And part of it is just being as angry as we have been watching some of these teams just underperform or you know, perform exactly as they should for the sorts of players that were on the field. But sometimes being the little team, being the little engine that just can't at times even, feeling like we need to prove ourselves or just kind of, I guess, qualify our fanhood as being worth it, we try to overdo it. And sometimes that gets super annoying, you know. Sometimes just enjoy the game how you enjoy it, all right? Sports is about experiencing something and trying to just let that be a part of your life and let it be a part of an experience that you have with yourself or with your family or with your friends, whoever you enjoy your games with. And sometimes we get caught up in trying to show that we're just the same sort of team as those around us, those bigger things like that. And that's just, it gets in the way of enjoying the game. And definitely the Red Sox didn't care that they were doing the wave. I guarantee you there's nobody on sports radio talking about how terrible that is. And it definitely didn't show up on Twitter about how terrible it was that all the fans were doing the wave during an 8-run inning while the offense was still on the field. Sometimes we need to get over ourselves. And I think that sometimes it comes up in the spots where we're the underdog team that really needs to show that we really have a reason to be there and that we have a reason to believe. Anyhow, I think we've got lots of reasons to believe here. We're going to watch the Bucks again, have a great end of the season. The Brewers are going to pick it up. It's going to be wonderful. And pretty soon, we're going to start talking real football. So until then, though, thank you again for joining me, listening to me just kind of drone on as much as I can here without Aaron to interrupt and tell me some sort of weird stat involving Jack Sikma somehow. I appreciate all the time you give into us, and thank you for joining us for another week. You can follow me at jbarn54. You can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1. You can follow Aaron, who's not here, and hopefully will be back with us next week, at Cheddar Talk. And again, if you want to reach out to the show, we're at podcast@ScottyJohnny.com and find out our website, www.ScottyJohnny.com. And remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast.